A gruesome story leads off our newscast.
Milwaukee police found body parts in a Northside apartment, and now they wonder if they've uncovered some kind of death factory.
At least 30 people have been found dead at a hotel.
Police found parts of bodies, leading them to believe the man they arrested is a mass murderer.
Z-O-Z-O.
Oh my God!
And welcome everybody to another episode of Lobotomized. I'm Kevin.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Amanda.
God, I couldn't hold off that intro any longer. There's a stupid bird that, like, I'm hearing.
We have a special guest today.
Yeah. If
little birdie.
If anybody hears a bird in the background, which is weird because we're in a basement and I don't have any birds as pets, but our wall is very close to outside and there's some annoying fucking bird that just won't shut up while I'm trying to do my intro.
I think it's cute.
I'm sure he's a cool dude. He's just
a song.
It's just like, can you go sing over there? Okay. Like, go on the other side of the house and fucking sing for a second. Jesus. All right. Well, I'm done bitching about birds. So, that's all I'm doing. How are you guys doing? You guys doing okay today?
Doing pretty good.
Still getting used to this new podcast schedule, that we've got going.
Yeah. I'd say. Did you guys have a good fourth?
Yeah. Yeah. It was good for the most part, you know?
Yeah. It was pretty good. Family get together.
No fireworks because, you know,
came home.
You know, weather and stuff.
Rain
but,
sucks.
I was able to catch some of the fireworks in my town, but yeah, it was actually a pretty good display, too.
Yeah.
Can you see it from your house?
No, but it's just a short walk down there.
Oh, nice. So. That's awesome.
What day did they have fireworks?
On the 4th of July, on the Saturday.
Lucky bastards. Okay.
Well, I know because, well, your town canceled on Sunday. Like, the next town over, like North Ridgeville, I know some people were going to go because they were doing it on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
They canceled it, too, because there was a huge storm that night, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a shitty 4th of July weather-wise. So, fucking way she goes, though. You know? Fucking way she goes. But we're not talking about the 4th of July. This year, we're actually talking about a guy from a country that doesn't even celebrate the 4th of July. So, and it's actually hopefully not too sore that we still do. So, we are, of course, talking about Robert John Maudsley, who is a English serial killer.
All right, let's go. I hadn't heard about this guy before.
Yeah, I was going to say, just real quick, did you guys ever hear about this guy before?
I never knew about this guy.
Yeah. I'm guessing probably his low numbers. Probably he's more under the radar.
Yeah, I would guess so.
I don't know.
But he's got an interesting story here. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
A little bit different than some of the other ones we've talked about.
Yeah.
We might not know him, but I feel like if you were to ask anybody in Britain.
It's actually really funny because I was literally telling Kyle, because when he got here, I was watching a YouTube video about him and everything. And it's literally every YouTube video I saw was a British person. Like, they all started, hello, they're talking about Robert Maudsley. And I was like, oh, there's not one American I've seen covering this guy. Like, nobody.
Yeah, he's obviously seems way more notorious in England.
Yeah. Well, he should be a fucking hero, but we'll get into that.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get into that. So Robert John Maudsley, born June 26, 1953, is an English serial killer, often nicknamed Hannibal the Cannibal or the Brain Eater
in
the media and among prisoners.
Those were attention-grabbing names, let me tell you.
The Brain Eater, especially. Hannibal the Cannibal is kind of...
It's kind of taken.
Derivative?
Yeah.
A little bit.
Well, I mean, combined with the fact that, spoiler alert, neither one of them are actually accurate.
Right, right.
So, yeah. It's just tabloid bullshit.
Right.
But, you know,
the Brain Eater sounds horrifying. No. But, like, dude, if you get that nickname in prison, like, you let people think.
You let people think
1,000%. You're eating
brains. That's how you keep your butthole safe.
Yeah, nobody's going to fuck with you.
Yeah. So, yes, he is one of Britain's longest-serving prisoners in solitary confinement. I believe he actually holds the record for most time spent in solitary confinement. I think 40, it was 40,
over 40 years in solitary?
I think he's at, like, 46 years.
Wow.
That is actually some of the most inhumane shit ever, dude. That's... even for prison, that's bad.
Yeah, that is also not a record that you want to have.
Hell no. So there's no way you could be sane that. And honestly, we'll get into it, but I don't think this guy's crimes. There's probably worse people in prison. Is all I'm saying.
There's 1,000% worse people. Well, I mean, in his case, there used to be worse people in prison until our boy fucking Bobby over here took care of them. But yeah, he has been described as one of the country's most dangerous inmates due to his history of violence, particularly inside secure facilities. So that's why they really didn't like him, because they couldn't stop him from killing people on the inside. Once they locked him up, he tripled his body count, pretty much.
Yeah.
So let's get into his early life here. So Maudsley was born in Speakey, Liverpool. I think that's how you pronounce that. He was the fourth of 12 children.
Wow.
To parents Gene and George. Unfortunately, when you got 12 of them to keep an eye on, there was some parental neglect. So he and some of his siblings, including the older ones, which were Paul, Kevin, and Brenda, were placed in the Nazareth House, which was a Catholic orphanage that was run by a bunch of nuns.
Why have that many kids if you're giving them away to an orphanage? I don't know. It makes me so mad.
Because it's 1950s Britain.
They never knew those fancy birth control methods, like pull it out.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was a thing, too. Like, right there, Catholic. Like, I'm pretty sure they found the whole Catholic thing, too. So.
That shows you right there.
So, it literally means every time they bang, they have a kid. So.
Then don't bang. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Don't do it.
There's other things you can do. There's other options. Now, perhaps what were we talking about in two episodes ago? Like, perhaps a trip to the chocolate factory would prevent things such as this. So I'm just saying.
This golden ticket.
Yeah, exactly.
Could have been his golden ticket.
Yeah. And apparently on the religious side, that's like a loophole. So I don't know. Yeah, that could have avoided that. But yeah, so they had 12 damn kids, and they ended up giving up 4 of them to this orphanage. Apparently this, I mean, usually when we hear about orphanages and stuff, though, it's like, this is the worst place ever. This one, from all accounts, didn't seem too bad.
When I first read about this, I thought of, which movie was that?
Was it one that we did?
Yeah. Okay. It was a Christmas one. It was the Christmas one.
Silent Night, Deadly Night?
Yeah, Silent Night, Deadly Night. Okay. Like, heard they went to an orphanage with nuns, I was like, oh my God, Silent Night, Deadly Night. But then, you know, obviously as the story goes on, it's not like that. But that was the first thing I thought. Yeah. I was like, oh no.
I watch that next time like it's a documentary.
Yeah.
The fuck?
I always think when I read something like this, a problem child.
No, oh, there you go.
With the redheaded clown
kid. Well, that kid was an asshole.
Oh, yeah. He was fucking just as crazy as anyone. But, I mean, they were fucking horrible. I mean, you got Gilbert Godfrey just sitting there at the desk screaming at these children.
I gotta rewatch that movie, dude. I almost no memory of any of the problem child movies. I just remember he was an asshole. Ritter.
Yeah.
I remember John Ritter was in him. That's pretty much it, though. Yeah, I mean, we'll have to get down on some of those at some point.
And also the guy had just quoted the dad from Dirty Work. Was it Jack Warden?
Oh, yeah, that dude. Yeah.
He's in him, too.
Oh, no shit. Nice. That's awesome. So this is a thing that I wasn't 100% sure on how this worked, but apparently once Robert was around age 8, the parents just kind of took him back. Like, can you just do that?
Yeah, I mean, like, we've talked about this before. I forget on which episode, but
yeah,
it was with your friend, sort of, where when she was adopting, you said the mother... take it back within like 3 days.
That was when they just adopted when they adopted a child at birth from but the birth mother still like so they went through all the things and everything was you know but nothing was
That's
official
what it was.
Until 72 hours after the birth of the child. So like you could have everything ready and then the baby could be born. You could have the baby for, you know, 70 hours. And then the mother goes,
take your backsies.
You know what? I think I want it back. And I just thought, I'm like, oh my God. First of all, how nerve wracking that is for the pair, you know, the adoptive parents.
Yeah, you've already gotten attached.
Right. You know, but yeah, so that's how that worked, at least for them. It was very crazy.
So they just like basically dropped him off at a babysitter for 8 years, more or less, is what these guys did.
I mean, I feel like that
they put him on layaway.
But, store.
Dude, is that how foster care works though?
I don't know. It's like, can you just go get your kids back?
Well, like, I think like foster care. I don't know much about foster care.
Back then, they probably didn't give a shit, you know?
Right. I don't know much about foster care, but I feel like maybe if a mother or father has like a drug problem, and maybe if they sober up and you know whatever. I feel like you can get your kid back.
Yeah, like I mean, I guess.
I think so, through, like, social workers and stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but I have no idea. Like, I'm really not familiar with foster care.
I'm
but
basing off of Angels in the Outfield. Okay. That's all I know. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know, right? Well, that guy just didn't want that kid because that kid sucked. So
yeah,
he was just annoying as shit.
The crazy kid who hallucinates angels.
Yeah, exactly. Oh yeah, you want that one? Like, okay, we should do that at some point. He's awesome. Oh man. So yeah. So unfortunately, it wasn't like Angels in the Outfield where they both got adopted by Danny Glover. Them going back to their parents. They immediately started getting abused. I guarantee there was no evaluation of mom and dad before they just gave them the kids back.
Right.
There's no way. Because apparently the abuse started immediately as soon as they got them back.
Yeah, which sucks because they were happy in the orphanage.
Yeah, like the
Surprisingly.
The orphanage was probably the best point of his life, living in that orphanage.
And it's so ironic.
Yeah, I know,
it just
seems
like, you know.
Yeah, when you get to go home, that's when everything turns to shit. So yeah, when we're talking severe abuse, this is what we're talking about. You know, beatings from his father, apparently using fists, belts, or sticks. Apparently, with their mother sometimes instigating it. So that's awesome. Muzzley later reported being locked up in a room for up to 6 months. Beaten multiple times daily, and claimed he was raped by his father as a child.
These I believe that. I left claimed he was raped. Scores. No, he was.
He like, probably
you're
was.
Not going to make that up as a kid. Absolutely not.
100%.
Wow. Wait, yeah. Here's the thing. Okay, so we talked about in the beginning. So he spent 40 years in solitary confinement.
Yeah.
I mean, think of it. He's already practicing right now.
Oh, yeah.
His dad's locking him up for 6 months in their room and only being beaten.
Coming in, beating the shit out of him, and then fucking rolling.
Right. But locking him up for 6 months, I mean, already, like.
No. It's a dry run.
Right. Yeah. So.
Well, if I mean, fortunately / unfortunately for him, he did end up making it out of there. He entered foster care and moved to London as a teenager. Of course, he developed a drug habit, started living out on the streets, and was a, quote, rent boy. This is actually the first time I've ever heard that term.
I've never heard
that
term.
Yeah, I've never heard that term either. So
it's a male prostitute?
Yeah, it's a male prostitute.
That's what they call it.
Yep.
In Britain.
I mean, it's accurate, I guess.
Like, right.
I've just never heard that term before. So yeah, he was doing that to support his drug habit, and apparently he made multiple suicide attempts during this period. He sought out some psychiatric help and reported hearing voices urging him to kill his parents, once stating, "If I had killed my parents in 1970, none of these people would have died."
Yeah. Here's the thing. Honestly, I just feel horrible for him at first. Look at he multiple suicide attempts. He sought psychiatric help.
Yeah.
He reported hearing voices urging him to kill his parents. 1970,
so they're like, ah, you're fine.
Yeah. Get out of here, rent boy.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's, you know, he's trying to, you know, make ends meet on his own. You know, he's trying to, like, I feel bad. Like, this kid, like, he had this go, like, I don't know. Like, I feel bad. He was just such, he was set up for complete failure.
Oh, yeah. He was fucked from the start. Yeah,
he did not have much of a chance. Lest they, you know, his parents just forgot about him in the orphanage, and who knows.
Hey, where's Robbie? I ain't seen Robbie in a couple of days. You took him to the orphanage. Oh,
they probably didn't even know. He's probably like, where's kid number four?
Yeah.
You know,
where's number four?
Or, what, you know, whatever number he
where's
was.
Where's punching bag? I feel like getting a couple rounds in.
Yes, I mean, he's got definite issues with his parents.
Oh, yeah.
Obvious reason.
100%. All right, so Maudsley has four confirmed victims, with three murders committed while he was already incarcerated. His killings are often characterized as vigilantism, targeting pedophiles, rapists, child abusers, or those involved in domestic sexual violence.
Okay, cool with that.
He has stated that he poses a threat specifically to such offenders.
That's hilarious.
Once again, totally cool with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I shouldn't say hilarious. That's not the right word. But like, I applaud that.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that he only got four of them.
And I'm sorry for what he had to go through to make him this way.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, he's getting rid of the very people, you know, yeah, who ruined children's lives.
Instead of so many of these assholes who were like, you know, I really hated getting diddled when I was a kid, but I think now that I'm an adult, I'm going to go and diddle kids because that fucking makes sense.
Yeah.
Right. This dude fucking went there and started taking the motherfuckers out.
I don't want anybody to be like me. Yep. I don't want anybody to feel the way I did.
Yep. Yeah. He's like, I'm going to start taking these motherfuckers out. So, bravo.
It's like his revenge is, you know, killing other, you know, pedophiles for the abuse that was bestowed upon him.
Good.
Yeah.
I mean,
I can see the logic, you know, in his brain. Like,
yeah,
I'm going to, you know.
I can see the logic in my brain, dude. Yeah. I'm like, I really wish he would have gotten more. Oh, boy. So I've been talking for a second. When do you guys tell us about number one?
All right. So the first guy, which the reason he went to prison, was named John Farrell, 30 years old. Took place in March 14th in London, 1974. So he was a laborer who picked up Maudsley, then who was around 20 to 21 years old, picked him up for sex and showed him photos of children that he had sexually abused.
Wow.
This just made Maudsley lose his shit, and he garroted him, which is basically like a tourniquet, right?
That's pretty much. Just strangling. Strangling. So.
And then that earned him with the police a early nickname of Blue because of the victim's face color.
That's awesome. Wow. That's fantastic. Oh, look at him. He's all
blue over here.
He's all blue. Oh, what he said? No, he's just blue because he couldn't breathe very good. So, you know, oh, I can't breathe. I don't think so, mate.
They say cops have dark zones.
I'm over here laughing my tits off too. So, yeah. Just for the record, because fuck this guy.
Yeah. Well, so even after choking him, though, he did stab this guy, smashed his head in with a hammer.
Wow.
Made sure.
Then he surrendered to police.
Yeah. Immediately surrendered to police.
Requesting psychiatric care.
Yeah.
Dude.
He's like, holy shit, I just murdered the fuck out of that guy. Maybe I need some medication.
Yeah. But you know what? But he was crying for help before.
Yeah.
He went to a psychiatrist, said, hey, I'm hearing voices to kill my parents. You know, did he end up going? Did they get into that?
No, he was a freaking rent boy.
I know.
They probably didn't, you know, do anything for him.
Yeah.
is my understanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I said, he's a rent boy, so they're not going to do
shit. Get out of here, rent boy.
Yeah, exactly. Go take your tricks somewhere else. Tricks are forget. Oh, no. No, never mind, sir.
Oh, my gosh. That was bad.
No, they're not. They're not.
Wow.
No, they're not.
I think
yeah, don't certain, say that to
I,
him.
Okay? I think a certain,
do not say that to Robert Maudsley.
Okay? I think a certain cereal company needs to think, rethink one of their slogans.
Yeah, that slogan is kind of messed up.
Yeah, that's kind of fucked. Nice. So yeah, but like I said, he turned himself in. This is what got him, you know, sent to this hospital. And I guess according to some of the stuff during his trial, like, I mean, not really his trials, but like his court hearings and stuff like that, he straight up told him, like, hey, if you put me in a situation where I'm around other people like this, I'm going to kill him. Like, I'm going to fucking kill him. I'm going to do it. Him. So don't do that. And that's what ended up leading to his situation. So, Amanda, you want to tell us about Dave Francis?
Yes. So he was 26 years old. This happened February of 1977 at Broadmoor Hospital. A convicted, David Francis was a convicted child molester.
Yes.
And Maudsley and another patient, David Cheeseman.
The cheese. The fucking cheese. Dude, cheese is a fucking psycho, man. Sorry, go ahead.
So that David Cheeseman was serving for attempt. It's probably Cheeseman, but I just want to say Cheeseman.
David Cheeseman. I'm just going to keep calling him the cheese. So
he was also serving for attempted murder. In the hospital, they held Francis hostage. Oh, in a cell.
Yeah.
Is this a psychiatric hospital?
This is a psychiatric
hospital.
There we go.
So, sorry. Yeah, that makes sense. So they had held Francis in a cell at a psychiatric hospital for around 9 hours. They tortured and garroted him. The body showed bruises with the cracked skull. A spoon was reportedly found in the skull, used as a makeshift weapon, leading to false rumors that Maudsley ate part of his brain. However, post-mortem reports clarify that no cannibalism occurred. However, the nickname stayed.
Yes, it did. You leave one spoon in somebody's head and they call you a fucking cannibal. Yeah. It's fucking ridiculous with these newspapers.
You're the brain eater. Oh. Like, come on.
It's prison. Spoons are weapons. That's why I have a spoon. But yeah, these guys, oh my God, him and the cheese. Dude, apparently with this one, him and the cheese were in there a couple days earlier and actually rearranged objects so it would be quicker to barricade the door.
Okay.
So like they were planning this out. I guess the whole time Maudsley's trying to like get that spoon into his face, the cheese is over running by the window like fucking like, you know, heckling the fucking guards that are trying to get in and shit, just like, you know, making faces at him and shit. And
but
basically
for 9 hours.
Yeah.
That's a long fucking time to not be able to get in this door.
Yeah. That's what I was saying.
They barricaded it pretty good, I guess.
Which is crazy to me.
They might not have known about it for the whole 9 hours, you know?
Yeah.
But like once they eventually came, like okay, I said, like I Cheese was just out there just fucking talking mad shit. And apparently once he made like the killing blow, he made a motion to the guards being like, he's fucking dead, dude. Like, it's over.
Yeah.
So, yeah, dude, Cheese was a fucking psycho.
Yeah.
He loved doing this shit.
I was picturing it, was telling you earlier, more like the guards are just outside, like, knocking on the door, like, could you please open up? You know, like,
the most being polite, too riot polite ever. About it. Like,
I hear a lot of screaming in there. Is everything all right?
You better not get any blood on that carpet there, mister.
But this is crazy because nowadays, because this was in the 70s, what, it was 77? What did we say?
This was in 77, yes. You know, February
I would love to have been a fly on the wall and just see what was in that room or what wasn't in that room. Because nowadays, when you have, like, in psychiatric hospitals and psych wards, there are super strict protocols about what you can have in a room, what you can't have in a room.
Well, right.
That's why I said, because this is the 70s.
Too many incidents like this, you know?
They just had spoons all over the goddamn place. Well, but also
people are very creative, you know, because there may not, that's why I'd like to be on a fly to the wall to see what was in there. Because, you know, and things that, you know, they have to take things out that are ligature risks. So strangulation risks, like there's many things that they take into consideration nowadays, but in the '70s, and in a different country, such as England, I don't know what they did and what they didn't do back in the day. So I would have loved to just, you know, be a fly on the wall and just see what they had in there.
Yeah, a lot of mistakes have to get made so they could, like, pinpoint every, like, little thing that you can't have. Well, there was something, too, that he had to have something to choke this guy with, too. So
yeah,
there was something like that.
They're just leaving random garrotes all over the place.
Dude, no, people get that. People use bed sheets.
Oh yeah,
people use like they whatever. Are creative.
Oh yeah, you gotta be.
All you have is time.
Yep. Oh man,
that's what always, like, I've heard so many stories of, like, prisoners, like, seeing the key on the guard's, like, belt long enough that they can, like, know how to, like, you know, basically whittle, like, a key that'll fit in and like get out. It's like, wow, the fuck did you?
But you're right; they have the time.
That perceptive. I mean,
when you got the time, dude,
it's all you have.
Yeah,
yeah. So, because of this, Maudsley was convicted of manslaughter, transferred to Wakefield Prison.
Yeah.
And apparently, he disliked this and wanted to return to that psychiatric hospital.
Apparently, during this as well, he was like, if you put me by a bunch of these people, I'm going to fucking kill them. Like, I'm going to do it.
Like, he's telling you. He's straight up telling you guys.
Don't send me here. I'm going to kill all these motherfuckers.
Yeah.
But, of course, they send him there. So, so we'll get into this. So, these next two are basically back to back. Because one day, Maudsley decided that he wanted to kill seven people. He had seven people in mind. But unfortunately, it was only able to find two of them. So let's get into the first piece of shit here. So, Solney Darwood, he was age 46, and this occurred on July 29th, 1978, at the Wakefield Prison. So, he was serving life for the manslaughter of his wife and sexual assault. Darwood had been giving Maudsley French lessons, apparently. And this whole time, you know, Maudsley's acting like everything's all cool. And he ended up luring him into his cell, garroted him and stabbed him, and then hid his body under the bed.
Damn.
Yep. So, somebody tell us about Willie Roberts here. This is literally the same day. Immediately after he got done stuffing this guy under his bed.
Yeah, same day. I think he went just, like, down the hall or whatever to find
him. He went, like, two cells down. It was like, ah, there you are, you piece of shit. Like, all right, let's go.
To find William Robert, 56 years old.
Billy Bob.
Yep, old Billy Bob.
Yeah, Billy Bob.
Billy Bobberts.
So he was serving 7 years for attempting to strangle and rape a four-year-old girl.
Oh, my God.
Awesome guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we definitely should keep him alive for, you know, some reason.
Yeah, so bad place to be around Mr. Bob Maudsley here.
He don't take too kindly.
No,
you never met him.
Yeah, he had never met this man before.
No,
he just knew what his crime was.
He just knew what he did.
Yep. Just cornered him in his own prison cell and killed him by hacking at his skull with a makeshift dagger and smashing his head against the wall.
Damn.
He then calmly informed the officers that the next roll call would be two men short.
It's amazing.
Oh, my God.
And yet, like we said before, he had planned on killing seven that day.
Yeah, if only he came up a little short, but I just love that. It's like, yo, you're going to be too short. Sorry, dude. It's a little bit of a mess as well.
Yeah. This,
like, how was this not found until they, well, I mean, understand, like, roll call, but nobody, like, heard anything? Did he strangle them so much that, like,
I mean, if you got them quick enough, like, you could, like, keep them quiet, you know? But yeah, you got to get them quick.
There's,
and get
no
them
other people around? So. I mean, or nobody that's willing to speak up?
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't see nothing.
Yeah.
I didn't see nothing.
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess you're right, because they're like, oh, if this guy's just going after prisoners, like, I'm staying the hell away from him. Mm-hmm.
If he's just trying to kill everybody in here, then I'm just going to leave him alone.
Yeah, it makes my job easier.
Mm-hmm.
I just truly don't think they care.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
I mean, some of them. Yeah.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
But yeah, so this, this little pair of shenanigans, of course, led to basically life imprisonment. So, and there was going to be no possibility of a release after these. They're like, all right, dude, you're done. You're staying locked up for the rest of your life.
But here's the thing.
That's enough of your shenanigans.
He would have probably been better off releasing him.
I know.
He would have killed less people.
Or he would have killed a couple more.
Or he would have killed some that weren't caught yet.
Yep, exactly. You know? He would have been doing your job for you, officers. Right. What do you think about that?
Like Batman.
Yeah, he's like Batman, but like the opposite of the rule. Yeah. Which would just make Batman way more effective. So. I'm not wearing hockey pads. Sorry. I'm watching the shit out of those fucking, those Pete Holmes, like, Batman parody fucking videos.
I love
They're
Pete Holmes.
So fun. Have you seen the Batman ones?
I haven't.
Oh, my God.
What's it just called? Batman or something?
Something like that. But, oh,
he's
my
so
God.
Funny. I would love to see that guy.
If you love Pete Holmes and you haven't watched any of that, no, you are depriving yourself. Just Google, like, Pete Holmes, like, Batman. He just plays, like, a retarded Batman.
All right.
It's, like, it's amazing.
I haven't seen those in a long time.
Like, one, like, Patton Oswalt's in one, playing the Penguin and shit. Like, it's fantastic.
I'll have to watch that.
I'll throw one on when we're done recording.
Yeah.
But before that, so let's talk about his imprisonment and the solitary confinement. Amanda, okay, you want to take this?
Yes. So he was deemed too dangerous for standard cells. Maudsley had spent decades in extreme isolation. In 1983, authorities at the Wakefield Prison built a custom two-cell basement unit, often described as the, quote, glass cage or box-like, which was reminiscent of Hannibal Lecter's cell in Silence of the Lambs.
It's amazing.
He is typically escorted by multiple officers when out of his cell and monitored 24/7. He was later moved to Wakefield's Close Supervision Center around 2003 with 1 hour of daily exercise.
Come on, man.
So in March of 2025,
break a sweat.
He began a hunger strike after guards confiscated items like a PlayStation, TV, books, and a radio following complaints about searches. In April of 2025, he was transferred to HMP Whitemore, which is a Category A facility, reportedly to a therapeutic wing or old man's wing for elderly inmates with medical or personality disorder issues. His family expressed concerns about the move and loss of privileges.
I had a PlayStation in there?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, he was chilling with the fucking PlayStation. Like, dude, just leave him alone. Like,
I'm going to be honest. Like, with PlayStation, books, you have an hour for exercise. I mean, yeah, you don't see people, but I'd like one of those days once in a while.
Yeah, once like in a while, nice, but not like for 46 years.
No, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Or not like that.
I bet he got really good at whatever PlayStation games they gave him.
I was going to say, hopefully they at least gave him something good. It wasn't like, yeah, you know, like,
giving, like, the worst
Barbie's games. Dream Adventure or some shit. Made him play that. Like, that would suck. Or like Mary-Kate and Ashley Go to the Mall or some stupid bullshit like that.
Yeah. I wonder if it was just the PlayStation 1. What year was that? 2003?
It was 2003, so they should have gotten him a 2.
Yeah.
They should have gotten him a PS2. Should have been. Yeah, PS2 is the greatest console of all time. So,
Excuse me, guard. I'd like to update to a PS2.
Yeah.
Dude, you should be so fucking
lucky. I know, right? Like, hey, I heard there was like a new Twisted Metal coming out. Can you like hook me up with that, please?
Well, they weren't taking any shit from him. He complained about having too many searches of his room, and like all of a sudden, all his shit's gone.
All of his shit was gone. Yeah. It's like, well, dude, like,
what are you hiding anyway?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're constantly getting, you know, bombarded by dudes just wanting to like look through all your shit, I'd be like, I'd get fucking annoyed too if I didn't have anything.
Like, what do you think I'm doing?
Like, do you think I'm doing? Like, you see,
this
like
is a basement cell. Like, I'm not doing anything.
It's me and Crash Bandicoot. Like, okay, it's just me and Crash just hanging out. Like, that's all we're doing. The fuck. Oh man. So Maudsley was frequently described by those who know him as highly intelligent, polite, well-mannered, kind, and articulate. He enjoys classical music, poetry, art, philosophy, books, and has interests in education. Supporters note a sharp, sometimes dark sense of humor and say he is not the typical narcissistic serial killer in conversation.
Because he's not the typical serial killer.
He's not the typical serial killer. He's taking out guys that should be fucking taken out. So, his brother and his nephew, Gavin, have spoken publicly, highlighting his traumatic upbringing and criticizing prolonged solitary as cruel and counterproductive.
I agree.
I kind of agree, too, a little bit.
Yeah.
If he was one of those other pieces of shit, though, I wouldn't care. You know? I'd be like, put him in a deeper hole. Like, I don't give a shit. But with him, I kind of agree. Some view him sympathetically as a product of abuse who targeted deserving. I'm not acknowledging those quotation marks. Victims. So, sorry. In my notes, it put quotations around the word deserving. So, like, yeah, get the fuck out of here. But, basically, others see him as irredeemably dangerous. Yeah, I mean, if you're trying to fuck some kids, then yeah, he's going to be pretty dangerous to you. Okay,
he's absolutely dangerous to you.
Maybe don't fuck any kids.
Speaking of that,
seems like everybody who doesn't fuck kids around him is fine.
I wish that they wouldn't have taken him out of the Broadmoor place so quickly, because I would just like to know, because I was watching the documentary about that Jimmy Savile piece of shit.
Yeah, that guy's a fucking total douchebag.
Oh my god, yeah. But he was in that. He did work in that Broadmoor place for like decades. And I don't know if maybe it was after this guy was in there after he got moved out or something. But if they would have crossed paths and like, you know, because I mean, it was sort of like an open secret with that dude. Like, no one was just going to, no one said anything because it was Jimmy Savile and he's like a famous TV guy.
But yeah.
He's like openly doing this fucking shit for so long. And yeah, if he would have ran into this guy though, he could have ended that shit real quick.
Yeah, that would have been great. That would have been great. Unfortunately, as far as we know, they never crossed paths. One person though that he did cross paths with was Britain's other most well-known inmate, Bronson.
Yeah, Charles Bronson.
Yeah, Charles Bronson. You might know him. Tom Hardy played him in that movie. Bronson, dude, is basically just a freaking maniac, so I barely remember it, but apparently they had a bit of a falling out over the issue of a watch. Apparently Bronson offered the watch to him as a gift. He didn't like it or didn't want it for some reason. And then that just kind of started the animosity between them.
Yeah, that's crazy. And that was at the Broadmoor place too, the psychiatric hospital?
Was that the prison. Prison. Yeah, it was like at the actual prison.
Okay.
Yeah.
Before he got like 40 years in a hole.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, yeah, you're just going to go into the, we built this fucking Magneto prison. So like, we're just going to put you in it. Have fun.
Yeah. That's what we were talking about earlier though, too, is like, shit I've read about that Charles Bronson guy. He sounds like way more dangerous to be around, honestly, than, this guy.
Yeah.
Because, he's, Unless you're, you know, a diddler, but
well, then
you better fucking worry.
You that's fucking got sure. it coming, bitch. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. But you know, the amount of fights and stuff, you know, the Brunson guy would be in and be like, I would not want to be in the same room as that guy.
No. All right. So who wants to take us into our deeper psychological profile and psychiatric insights?
All right. Yeah.
Tell us about some of those.
So, but yeah, Maudsley showed signs of a severe trauma early on. After multiple suicide attempts in his early teen rent boy years.
Yeah, there you go.
He reported that his auditory hallucinations to the psychiatrist, like the voices that were telling him to kill his parents. So he did receive a schizophrenia diagnosis in the early 70s. And that's kind of what led him to his initial placement in the Broadmoor psychiatric facility rather than the prison. But Dr. Bob Johnson, he was a psychiatrist who worked extensively with him at the HM prison Parkhurst. In the 80s and 90s, he did 3 years of interviews and counseling, made notable progress until one day, I think the prison just told him, okay, you can't talk to him anymore. And which baffled him. I think he was, you know, like finally making progress.
Yeah, they kind of cut him off a little bit.
Yeah, they must have been like, well, this guy's actually enjoying these sessions. They really make me think of Silence of the Lambs, like that guy's name. The bad guy from Bushwhacked.
Yeah, I know. You know? Mr. Bragdon.
But he's such an asshole. You know, he like just wants these people to suffer.
And, yeah,
they're criminals, but like, I don't know.
I remember his Bushwhack name, but I don't remember his real name.
Yeah. I do. Yeah. Or his name in Silence of the Lambs. On the tip of my tongue, but.
He was on the show Boston Public as well, if anybody ever watched that show back in the day. Sorry. I know that's a deep cut. But,
that's a deep cut. I remember that show, but I never remember.
Him and Chi McBride is the principal. Or Chai, I don't know, whatever.
But yeah, the psychiatrist, he rejected the mindless killing machine label, and he described Maudsley as rational and not mad at all.
Nice.
Mad isn't crazy.
Mm-hmm.
He attributed the murders to what he was calling toddler revenge, which is where Maudsley, in a moment of rage, you know, visualized the abusive parents as in his victim, like the people he killed. So he just thinks that he got a calmness and introspection and verbal expression of issues, but it no longer posing a broad threat.
Unless you were a diddler.
Basically, yeah. So you're going to have big problems if you, you know, somehow tell him that you're a pedophile.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So the forensic discussions note that his genius level IQ, the appreciation for classical music and poetry and art and philosophy, he expressed interest in the open university studies for music theory.
Nice. And
the correspondents and visitors describe him as polite, humorous, engaging, and not the stereotypical intense narcissistic killer.
Because that's not what he is. He just kills the fucking bad people.
He actually advocated him to have, like, possibly be released. Or, like, you know, at least have better conditions that he was in.
Yeah, that's why I think this, like, Hannibal Lecter shit is a little bit too far for this guy.
100%. Well, he never ate anybody.
No, like, he didn't. He never like, ate if that's anybody. Going into their like put him in a cage thing because they think like he ate brains. Like it didn't happen.
It didn't happen.
No, yeah, he's just killing other people. That's why. I mean, killing other.
The
inmates,
problem is he's doing their fucking job better than they're doing it, and they're fucking jealous and pissed off about it. So they're making his life a living hell by putting him in a box and taking his fucking PlayStations away. Fucking dicks.
You know.
All right, so let's get into this toddler revenge theory a little bit.
Okay.
This first off, this sounds like the worst slasher movie ever.
Toddler Revenge.
Like, Part 2.
I would 1,000% watch that movie, but it would, that'd be like you would find in the bowels of Tubi. Like, that's where you find Toddler's Revenge.
Deep, deep down.
Way down. All right, sorry. Go ahead.
So Dr. Bob Johnson's, quote, toddler revenge theory is psychological framework he developed through extensive work with Robert. So it explains Mosley's violent episodes as rooted in unresolved childhood trauma rather than inherent psychopathy or random madness. So Dr. Bob Johnson, his background was a psychiatrist and clinical psychologist. He encountered Maudsley during a prison tour at HM Prison Parkhurst in May of 91. Maudsley was held in solitary confinement, described as a gaunt, long-bearded Moses figure behind wire mesh. So Johnson spent about 2.5 to 3 years persuading authorities to allow therapy sessions, which were recorded. Johnson rejected the, quote, mindless killing machine or purely psychopathic narrative. He viewed Mosley, he reviewed him as rational, highly intelligent, capable of introspection. He believed therapy could address latent aggression, and after sessions, concluded that Mosley no longer posed a broad threat to the inmates or society. So Johnson had advocated for relaxed conditions and, like I said before, or release considerations based on the work that they put in.
Fuck yeah, all about it.
Right. So one of the quotes from Johnson, he actually said, quote, "If you're not careful, he projects the picture of his father onto you." That's terrifying.
Yeah, that's not great.
Especially if like you didn't do anything.
That is not great.
Or you just, like, I don't know.
You just say the wrong thing.
You say word. No. You say some weird word that only his dad said, and all of a sudden he's coming at you with a shank.
Yep. All right. So let's get into the core of the toddler revenge theory. So Johnson concluded that Maudsley's murders represented the toddler revenge, which was a regression to an infantile state of powerless rage triggered by reminders of his childhood abusers. That sounds like Baby Games. Sorry. It's a movie that Kyle and I made back in the day about a murderous baby. So we actually probably could have named it Toddler's Revenge, honestly.
Yeah, it would fit.
I do think Baby Games is a better name, but that's neither here nor there. So, as a toddler / infant, Robert endured severe repeated physical beatings. Like you said, he was locked in a room for months, beaten multiple times daily, possible sexual abuse, though, probably.
Why do you keep saying possible sexual abuse?
It's never confirmed.
He said he was raped. He was raped.
Amanda, it's like those episodes where we have to say allegedly, like after saying everything, it's just kind of the same thing.
It makes me mad.
It's basically the same thing. I don't like it any more than you do. Yeah. But I'm just saying it's just that. It's the same type of thing. So a child that age lacks the physical or verbal power to fight back effectively, of course. The rage, fear, and trauma start getting bottled up. So when this person becomes an adult, when they're encountering pedophiles, rapists, or domestic abusers, Maudsley experienced a dissociative or regressive state. He visualized his father in the victim, and the, quote, toddler finally gets lethal revenge, ineffective in childhood, but deadly now. This frames the killings as symbolic, trauma-driven vigilantism rather than calculated predation or pure sadism.
I mean, I honestly can understand that.
I can understand that. That makes sense. Honestly, I think it's probably full of shit.
I do too.
But like I said, I'm still okay with it. I'm still okay with it.
The reason why I think that, like I understand that. The reason why I think his was a little bit more calculated because didn't he know, he knew he wanted to kill 7 people. So this is, that shows me that there's a premeditation, and also with him and that other guy, when they, killed that patient in their psychiatric ward, to me, this him seems pretty calculated. Is that what you're talking about? Yes.
Him and the cheese, man.
That seems calculated to me.
Like I said, 3 days before they moved the furniture to make the room easier to borrow.
So this is premeditated. Yeah. This is, to me, this isn't just like a rage, oh my gosh, I had no idea.
All of a sudden he goes into like a fugue state and it's like, oh, I'm just watching myself commit these crimes. It's like, no, I killed these motherfuckers.
But I also think that toddler revenge, I feel like you can be premeditated in that. I still understand that. But I just don't think that it was
Like I said, all of a sudden he just goes into
I don't think he just disassociated.
He's like, no, I killed all these motherfuckers and I'm going to keep doing it. So
yeah, I don't think he disassociates. I just feel like.
Yep. And why? Because fuck him. That's why. So this whole theory here, this does align with Maudsley's first murder, basically his reaction to the child abuse photos, which triggered his own memories and everything, and later prison killings of sex offenders and child molesters. Johnson linked it to Maudsley's reported hallucinations, the voices he heard asking him to kill his parents, and suicide attempts as outlets for the same unresolved pain. Hey, how come voices in your head always tell you to do bad things? Every single time, everybody has a voice in their head. Yeah. It always tells them to do something terrible. Like, there's never one that's like, study for your math test or tell your mom you love her. Yeah, exactly. Like, it's never any of that. It's always like, kill the babysitter. It's like, oh shit. Like, all right. Like, what the fuck? I don't know. It's just something I've always wondered about. Like, there's no positive voices in your head.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's just.
Well, I feel like the positive voices are just your thoughts, maybe? And then like the bad ones are like I don't get it. I was gonna say that the bad thoughts are just like the little devil on your shoulder.
It's still thoughts, I guess, but I don't know, it's just kind of weird. Who's next with the supporting observations from therapy?
Kyle?
Sure.
Cool.
So he when he was talking to the therapist, he shifted from third person and defensive talk to which to trusting Johnson and engaging openly with him.
Nice. That's good.
Yeah. That must have been, why they just cut off these sessions.
He was making progress.
Yeah. He's, having too good of a time with this. We thought it was going to probably break him down emotionally and cause him pain, but once they saw he was enjoying it, they were probably like, well, gotta take this away from him.
Yep. I don't think so.
Yeah, but he demonstrated the ability to verbalize the issues instead of just acting out violently on him. So psychiatrist Johnson observed the progress in reducing the aggression, and Maudsley developed a calmness and a self-reflection about the crimes. So it does emphasize the environment over innate evil. So serial killers, in Johnson's view, are largely products of their environment, especially with the abuse early on. Which, killer pretty much I've ever read about, there's some childhood trauma.
Yeah. don't know. I think a lot of people are just born or broken, just though,
weird
too.
Kids.
But there's a lot, too. Like, you know, they get like the head injury is like a huge one with them as well. Like, I don't know.
The one person who did have a regular childhood, though, was Dr. Swango, didn't he? He had a pretty, well, his dad was always gone. Remember, he was a military guy. His dad was always gone.
Oh, my God. I don't get to see my dad every day. I have to murder a bunch of people.
Was his dad, like, a really bad alcoholic, too?
Well, his dad had, like, weird
he had, like, the journals death book, too.
Of, yeah, he had that weird, so that's what I'm saying. Like,
okay, his dad had some weird hobbies. I don't know.
Was he born like that? Like, you know, was he, because, like.
I feel like some of them are just broken. Like, they can't, not all of them come off the assembly line good. Like, some people are just fucking broken.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
But, because I was just trying to think. I mean, most of them had, you know, could have messed up childhoods, but some of them didn't. Some of them just, yeah.
Yeah, they're just busted for one reason or another.
Something in the brain just
didn't
fire correctly.
Yeah, I don't know. All right. You want to talk about the criticisms and limitations of Steph?
I will.
I was going to say, you're up next.
This is the limitations of...
of, like, his treatment and everything.
Oh,
like that,
his basically. Treatment.
Just like,
okay.
Just, like, his theories of how to fix him and his treatment and everything like that.
Oh,
so,
okay. Of, like, you know...
There's just the context and criticisms of, like... Yeah, of, like just therapies. His whole...
Okay.
You know,
so the strength... So it humanizes Mosley without excusing his crimes. So it fits the trauma-informed psychology. And is based on direct, long-term clinical interaction. It explains the selective targeting of his, quote, deserving victims.
No quotes necessary.
But the broader implications, Johnson used this to argue against indefinite solitary confinement, claiming that it repeats the abusive isolation of Mosley's childhood, which is what I said before.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it does. It repeats the abusive isolation of Mosley's childhood and hinders rehabilitation, which I totally agree.
Mm-hmm.
He has campaigned on prison reform. Now, the limitations of this therapy that he had. Now, this is just one clinician's interpretation from specific sessions, and not all experts agree. Prison authorities prioritized risk after an in-custody. Authorities prioritized risk after the in-custody murders. So, kind of like, okay, do we risk him killing
just
anybody
killing
else,
more people.
Or do we just keep him? Yeah, so that's what they did there. And Mosley's whole life sentence and extreme danger label reflect official views that he remains a lethal threat in less controlled settings. Public disclosure often sensationalizes him, overshadowing nuanced psychological views.
Kind of like I'm doing. Kind of like I'm extremely guilty of right now. I don't care, dude. He's killing pedophiles and fucking guys that murder women. So fuck them. Okay.
So the theory appears prominently in documentaries like Making a Monster, where Johnson discusses tapes and insights and is referenced in true crime analyses. It provides a compelling trauma-based lens on Mosley's motivations, but remains debated in forensic psychology, balancing victim empathy, accountability, and rehabilitation potential. Johnson's work stands as a notable example of therapeutic engagement with high-risk offenders. Mm. I mean, I see. So I really agree with Johnson. I understand from a prison view that they're just like, dude, we can't have any more murders.
We can't have any killing murders. You're like, making us look terrible at our jobs.
Right. Like,
I feel like he could be sent to, like, back to the Broadmoor psychiatric place, just as long as there was no pedophiles anywhere near him.
Yeah. He'd
like,
probably
if
be
just
fine.
Saw some other kind of, like, you know, antisocial person, played some chess or whatever, like, they're probably not going to kill him over losing or something.
No. No, he basically has the one code, it seems like, and That's pretty good. That's pretty fantastic.
But I mean, on their side, it is a risk.
Yeah.
You don't know though. You don't know. So you're just gonna like snap.
Well, the thing too with him as well, which is like one of the things I love about him, but one of the things that they probably hate about him is when he does kill somebody, he doesn't just walk by really quick and like shank him really quick and walk away. He locks them into a room and keeps them for 9 hours and tries to shove spoons into their fucking brain. Like, something like that, I could see them being a little bit more uppity about. Because it's like, yeah. Okay, dude.
I don't understand how they could not get into that room after 9 hours.
Like, I mean, he's a smart guy. What
did he do?
He's a smart guy. Like I said, they probably didn't know the whole 9 hours, but still.
Yeah.
I just love the idea, though, of the cheese just making faces at him through the windows and shit while Maudsley's just shanking this
dude. But here's
the
thing, for like I said, for psych wards or psychiatric hospitals, at least nowadays, there are, if you're not on like, you know, constant observation, there's at least like Q15 minute observation. Like, just, you know, just kind of see where they're at. Like,
popping in really this quick.
This in the 70s, like,
oh, yeah.
Who knows?
It was a lot different.
Who freaking knows?
It was a lot different.
Yeah, when they do their Q15 minute rounds or Q, you know.
They're all outside smoking. Meanwhile, fucking Rob's in there just, I'll rip your fucking arms off and shove them up your ass. Like, just freaking out on somebody.
Wow. And I'm sure, like, obviously, you know, everybody that he killed were monsters,
mm-hmm.
you know, but of course, you know, those monsters have families that cared about, you know, cared about them and stuff like, and guess what? Each time there's a murder in there, I bet the state or whoever had, there is a huge fucking debrief, like, whose fault is this?
What happened? You know, how did it happen? Blah, blah, blah. Who's like, getting fired?
Lots of paperwork.
Yep. They're getting tired of filling out all their paperwork and everything.
Honestly, probably. Okay. We're going to lose our funding. We're going to lose our state funding.
This makes us look bad.
I wonder if he like had one particular guard he didn't like and he's like, all right, I'm just going to kill people on his shift. Just going to kill him on this shift.
Or maybe a guard that he did like and that guard turned the other way.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I would definitely get some blindness at that time, I'm sure. If, I was walking through the cell block.
Yeah. 3 a.m, I was sleepy.
Like, oh, yeah. Oh, man. All right, so let's get into some of his personal writings here. So, Maudsley has written letters that definitely reveal his profound frustration with isolation. So this is a quote from one of his letters. The prison authorities see me as a problem, and their solution has been to put me into solitary confinement and throw away the key, to bury me alive in a concrete coffin. It does not matter to them whether I am mad or bad. They do not know the answer, and they do not care just so long as I am kept out of sight and out of mind. I am left to stagnate, vegetate, and to regress. Left to confront my solitary head on with people who have eyes but don't see and who have ears but don't hear, who have mouths but don't speak. My life in solitary is one long period of unbroken depression. I think that was a thing too, like while he was in there, that they were telling a lot of the guards to just ignore him.
Completely ignore him.
Like if you make eye contact, just look away. If he says anything to you, don't respond. Just fucking ignore him. Throw his food into the hole, you know, 3 times a day, and then that's it.
I mean, that would make anybody insane.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah. In earlier statements around his first killing, he reportedly said something like, "This is ludicrous. I'm sorry for all the pain that my actions have caused. I'm prepared to die if you say it is necessary." And that was at the beginning. That was at the beginning. He was in there for 46 years and still is to this day.
Oh, my God, yeah.
He has maintained correspondence with his family, pen pals, and supporters for about 5 years. Okay. Family perspectives?
Okay, yeah. His brother, Paul, he has been vocal about it, and that's his oldest brother. He would say that the orphanage was a positive time for him and the rest of the siblings, Robert included. But the return to the parents is what brought the horror. And he said that Paul... Paul wondered why Robert was specifically fostered out of the family. They told that Robert had he did the first murder, but Paul only reconnected via the news later of the killings.
That's so fucking weird.
They told him his brother died. Yeah.
So then, I mean, that would show that nobody, that means the parents never planned on visiting him. You know what I mean?
Your brother
died. Yeah. So to ensure that no one visited him.
Yeah.
So because no one.
So they didn't have a funeral or anything? Weren't they, the siblings like, oh, wow, what the fuck?
Yeah.
They really were Catholic, right? You know?
Well, I mean, yeah, they were, but probably when they asked, the fucking dad was just like, oh, shut the fuck up. And like, backhanded.
He don't have money for that.
Yep. He bringing shame on the family. It's not me being a drunk piece of shit. He's fucking beating all my kids all the times. I didn't break him. He broke him when I got him back. It was those fucking nuns at the nunnery with all the children's. All right, I'm done.
What sucks is you're making the dad sound cool, and he's not.
I know. Well, what I'm saying is all bad.
What you're saying is all bad.
It's just fun to do that. It's just so much fun.
It's fun. It is fun.
We gotta do more British fucking cases. Sorry. Everybody listening is like, fuck no, no, you don't need to do more British cases.
God's sake, don't.
Just stop. Stick to American, you asshole.
Well, even his nephew, Gavin Maudsley, had advocated publicly about getting him out, emphasizing the family support and the visits and his concerns over the conditions. He describes his uncle as changed for the better in some ways, but notes the injustice of prolonged isolation. In 2017, Gavin said he's so much better now that he's outlived most of the wardens who hated him.
Good for him.
Gavin does not condone the killings, but notes the victims were really bad people and that Robert didn't target women or children.
Nope.
The family expressed worries about the 2025 transfer to the HMP White Morris Fens unit.
That was like the old man unit, right?
Yeah.
Elderly unit.
Yeah, it's the geriatric ward of the prison.
Yeah.
Oh, for high-risk personality disorder inmates.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the family was fearing the close proximity it's going to put him to sex offenders. Obviously.
Apparently, they put him with a bunch of sex offenders when they moved him there.
I mean, they did that on purpose.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
They did that on fucking purpose.
Given Robert's triggers. Yeah. calls and visits were reportedly disrupted during that hunger strike period we mentioned earlier.
Yep.
But goddamn. Yeah, can you imagine, like, just becoming the warden there and being like, last day of training. Oh, by the way, there's this old man down in the basement in a private cell. Don't say anything to him, ever.
Yeah.
Don't even look at him. Be like, wait, what?
The fuck are you talking about? All right, well, let's go ahead and go into a couple of those conditions here. So we'll talk about his custom cell at Wakefield from 1983 onward. So this was 18 by 15 feet, and it was glass-fronted for constant observation in the basement. It's like we were talking about earlier. Like, it wasn't like a...
A glass box.
Just a glass box in the middle of the room, like in Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
You know, like that.
Towards the end.
Yeah, towards the end. It wasn't like that. It was more... Just in the wall, and then the front was all glass. Basically, like at the beginning.
In the beginning.
Yeah, when she first meets him. That's she, like, comes exactly walking down, and Anthony Hopkins is just standing there all weird and shit.
Creepy.
Like, it's amazing. He's so good in that movie. He's fucking great. But yeah, so, of course, like we were saying, he had 23 hours where he was locked in, and then 1 hour of escorted exercise, often with 4 to 6 officers. Over time, though, he did get limited privileges, which were books, music, a TV, and he even got a PlayStation, which is pretty sweet. Hopefully, like I said, he was playing some, like, Crash Bandicoot or some shit and had some decent games there. Of course, though, the daily reality. So, extreme isolation led to concerns about mental deterioration. Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm. Even the guards won't even look at him. Like, come on.
Yeah, former prisoners who caught glimpses of him noted visible hurt and pain. So 2025, kind of talked about this a little bit, but he did go on a hunger strike in March after his a bunch of his stuff was confiscated. Like I said, his PlayStation, TV, books, radio.
Honestly, I would have done the same thing.
Searches. Yeah, I would have been like, you know what, fuck this. Because he's actually,
all I had.
He's actually asked for like a cyanide tablet before. He's just like, look, just give me a fucking cyanide tablet. Like, this is bullshit. Let's just end this. You know?
He wanted one of those birds, too, at one point. That's what, when he asked for the cyanide, I forget what the bird is called.
Yeah, I've got really it like right. I got it like right at the end. So,
yeah.
It's basically a parakeet.
Yeah, it's a type of parrot.
It's a type of parrot.
But it can learn, like, human words, too, like a parrot.
Oh, nice. That's pretty cool.
Which is so weird because, yeah, he just wanted something to talk to, even if it's just a fucking bird.
Yeah.
Like a Wilson type of thing.
Yeah. But then it can actually say words back, which is kind of cool.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much. But, yeah, so basically, you know, as of 2026... He is 73 years old and one of Britain's longest serving solitary confinement prisoners. No recent photos exist publicly because most are decades old. He has expressed frustration with the system and once pleading unsuccessfully in 2000 to relax conditions or receive a cyanide capsule for suicide, what I was saying.
Yeah.
Because he was just fucking done with it. And this is, it was a budge rigger. Budge rigger. So is the name of the parakeet, which he was denied. So they didn't even give him a bird. And I heard like the reason was like, oh, he probably hurt the bird. Like,
okay, no, I mean, he wouldn't. But it would probably shit all over. It would probably shit all over.
Well, they're like, oh, he'll bite the head off because he's a cannibal and shit. And I'm like, okay,
dude, no, he won't. Like,
no, he will not.
He just wants something to like talk to, or connect with.
Yeah, exactly.
In some way.
But yeah.
It's not really that much.
So that is the story of Robert Maudsley. So what are you guys' final thoughts on Robert here?
I don't know. It's just crazy to know at this moment right now he is over there.
He's in chilling.
A basement cell like Hannibal Lecter just sitting there with nothing for all this time. God, I just kind of... Once again, remote viewing, if it was possible,
just looking on him.
Interesting.
You want to check in on him
to just be like, wonder what's going on over there, man. Like, God, like I'm almost picturing like the old man in like the beginning of Aladdin. You know what I'm saying?
Like, you mean when Jafar was dressed up as the guy? Yeah. Okay.
The old man.
And he like tricks him?
Yeah. Okay. That's sort of what I'm picturing. I mean, but yeah, in Hannibal Lecter's cell.
Yeah.
See, from what I'm going by what I've read today, learned today, I just feel bad for him. Like, I don't look at him. I don't look at him as being an inherently bad guy.
Mm.
I don't. I mean, do I think he did some questionable things? I say questionable only because the people he killed were horrible people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, should he have done that? I don't know. But I don't think, you know, you read about his childhood, like I said, and other, you know, other people have bad childhoods. I get it. You know, there are people in life that have terrible childhoods, and guess what? They grow up to be great people.
Yep.
You know, so,
yeah,
you know,
there's that too.
They're, you know, they grow up to be great people. You can't always use, you know, your excuse as a child, you know, as a child to, you know, make excuses for what you do as an adult. Mm-hmm. However, it doesn't help. Doesn't help.
No.
And I just, but I do think that I understand why police would put him in isolation, because they probably didn't want to do the fucking paperwork. And I'm just saying that because
makes him look bad.
That sounds superficial, but like, I don't know that they cared about the pedophiles' lives. I think they cared more about state funding and, you know what I mean? Like, we're going to, you know, we can't have this happen again.
Yeah.
Really.
Nobody gets a bonus if this happens again.
Or so. Just like, right. We can't have this happen again because, you know, we're doing big debriefs. We have people looking in on how we're, you know, like, you know, we're having, you know, whoever, the government or somebody's going to come in.
The governor's breathing down my neck because
well, really?
All this
sure,
shit.
That's why the other wardens hated him.
Or whatever they have
so,
over there.
So
really, whatever they have. Somebody coming in auditing. They probably have people coming in auditing what they're, you know,
the
how
prince
they're
is breathing
looking.
Down my fucking neck. Like,
right?
Is that what they got? Yeah.
So I can understand why they would put him in solitary. I do think that, I mean, like I said, I'm going exactly what I'm reading today. I think it's too much. I think the guy, like, they're like, he's a rational guy. Just, he's had a shitty life and he's a very, like, we know this. He is triggered by pedophiles and, you know, bad people such that. That's those are his triggers. That is 100% his triggers. You know, if you put him in a jail with people that have, you know, are in there for theft or something else, like, he's probably not going to bother them, you know, because that's not his triggers. But I don't know. I can't help but, like I said, I don't condone what he did, but you know, I feel bad for him.
Yeah.
And I also just, you know, the people who he killed, I despise those people.
Yeah. I don't feel bad for them at all.
You know,
you never know if he could have just turned it around and been like, just made it even, like, if it wasn't directly to it, like, just made it about his childhood too. Like, oh, you stole a car. Well, like, my dad stole my childhood, so I'm going to kill you.
I don't know. I feel he tried to get help.
Yeah.
Like,
that's true.
As a teenager, or like when he was, I don't know if he was a teenager
was like
or when
20.
He was 20.
Yeah, it was like 20, like, basically.
He tried. Yeah,
like
I feel
said,
like
to cry for help.
And then that trigger of that guy showing him pictures of kids, that would trigger me, man.
What would prompt that too? Like, what the fuck?
Well, maybe that guy had plans on killing him.
Yeah, we just got done. Yeah. You know, here, let me show you these pictures. Like,
honestly, what? I feel like if that happened to any of us, that would have triggered any of us. Like, if some guy sat down and said, "Hey, look at these kids
out.
That I
oh,
be like,
God,
I'm gonna
yeah.
fucking beat the shit out of you
that
now
would,
with everything I can pick up."
Yeah,
that would trigger any that would trigger, like, everybody that I know, I feel like if they were in that scenario, that would trigger us to, you know, if we're not beating the shit out of that guy, we're at least calling the fucking cops on
him.
We're at least getting justice.
Yeah, at least trying to.
Right, right.
Trying to.
This is an interesting one. I never heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
Really, I can't, because I feel like this would be one that would be brought up as people kind of, like I said, he's a vigilante. Like,
yeah,
people bringing him up, like, of, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it's the low numbers. I really think that's what it is. If he would have gotten closer to 10, you know, like, he probably would have been a little bit more well-known.
Yeah. I think, too, if he didn't kill those two people on the same day, and still, like, you know, tried to get psychiatric help and shit, he could have been out a long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel
even
like,
with the other murder in prison, but, like,
still, though.
Without the two in the one day, that then they were just like, you're done.
Yeah. Yeah, well, especially when he's like, I'm going to kill seven.
Yeah.
Like, he's just not doing himself any favors. I feel like he could have done a lot, like, a lot of good could have come from him if he would have had a, like, Dexter's dad type character in his life when he was a kid who could have steered him towards stuff. Like,
yeah.
I feel like he really could have benefited from something like that. Just a little structure in his fucking madness.
Yeah.
Because he definitely had a code for fans of, you know, fans of Dexter. Everybody knows about the code. He definitely seemed to have a code. He just didn't know how to deal with it. So, but
I would love this guy in his, you know, in his isolation. I would love to read his autobiography.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be like, hey, you have all the time in the world. Write about it. I'm sure the guards wouldn't let it get past the room, but
probably not.
I'd love to.
Yeah,
you know, I want to hear that. Like,
my first memory is I was in an orphanage. Then I was in a hellhole that I called my family home. Then I was a hooker, and then I was in prison. I'm sorry, psychiatric hospital.
Yep.
Then prison. Then my own cave.
Yep.
And that's where I've been ever since.
Pretty much more of the same.
Ah, that sucks. So, like, the time between him going to prison and, like, being free in London was, like, a year or two?
Yeah, it wasn't a lot. It wasn't a lot. All right.
Yeah, I almost feel bad.
Yeah. So that is Robert Maudsley. Hero, villain, maybe a little bit of both. But, so that is what we think about this guy. But, what do you guys think about this? Do you think this guy is a bit more of a hero than a villain? Kind of split in the middle? Where do you think this falls? You can.
I'm split in the middle. Yeah. I'm split in the middle.
Let us know down in the comments. And also, if you want more from us, you can check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And I suppose until next time, I'm Kevin.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Amanda.
Peace out.
Bye.
Good night.